Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Indie Corner. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I'm here with a great, great guest that I've been dying to talk to and chat with since I first saw her in Bloodletting years ago. Please welcome Sasha Graham. How you doing, Sasha?
Hi, good. How are you?
Good. Yeah, I think literally Bloodletting was the first Tempe movie ever. Well, no, Dead and Rotting was the first Tempe movie I ever saw, but or whatever. I think that might have been Full Moon and Tempe. But this was the first like one that I realized who everybody was, and I started kind of following your guys's, you know, careers and everything. And I started watching you in like Polymorph and a bunch of other films. So a big fan here, and can't wait to kind of dive into sort of how you got into this and, you know, sort of what your life is like now, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So first off, I want to ask sort of like, were you always wanting to be an actress?
That's a great question. Yeah, I don't know that I always wanted to be an actress, but from the very moment that I saw my first play, which probably was first grade, I think, I remember the first time I kind of encountered theater, I was utterly gobsmacked by this kind of alternate reality that was playing out in front of me. And so I was just in love with theater, and then of course with movies. And so it was more that kind of desire to be part of this imaginary world that I think then led me to want to become an actor.
Okay, so you did theater, you know, probably when you were very young, right? I mean, I'm not sure if you still do theater, but you started very young. Well, do you remember your first play?
The first play that I saw or the first play I was in?
Your first play you were in.
Oh, yes. It was a school production of Oklahoma, and I was just in the chorus. But like, you know, when you're a little kid and you feel like you're in something with older kids and it seems like the biggest thing ever, like to me, it felt like I was like part of a Broadway show. I think I was like in fifth or sixth grade, and I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe I get to be part of this. It was so exciting. It was so incredible because it was all about like kind of being in this imaginary world that was so much more exciting than the one I was living in.
Nice. Actually, I was in Oklahoma. Really? Not, I was older. I was like 18 or 19, something like that. And maybe, I don't think I was 20, but I was like in that age. I'd already graduated, and I was with a group, and I can't sing. So they basically had me in the chorus in the background pretending to sing. So that was nice. It was my first and only so far musical. And I would be okay with that being, you know, it's not my life. But that's interesting. That's really cool that it's your first one. And you, so basically that led you to doing other ones after that.
It did. I mean, I was one of those kids. I was very unsatisfied with my childhood in that I had this kind of weird eclectic childhood where my mom kind of like dragged me around the country. We lived in a lot of different states, a lot of different homes. And the whole time that I was growing up, I was like, this is weird. Like I just, there was some like greater part of myself that was like, no, this isn't normal. This isn't what I want to be a part of something like greater and more, kind of artistic and beautiful, right? And so for me, that wound up very much landing in this idea of New York City and being part of like the arts community in New York, and which is where I wound up. I moved to New York City as soon as I was graduated from high school. And so like being an actor kind of satisfied all of those things because it was like the immediate place where you could kind of absorb yourself into this imaginary land where things were kind of perfect and heightened and dramatic and beautiful and fantastic. Yeah.
That's amazing. So what led you from doing the theater? And obviously you were a kid and growing up to going into film.
So when I kind of hit the ground in New York City as an actor, I was open to anything. Like, I loved theater, but obviously I was also in love with movies. And so I was ready to go anywhere and kind of be a part of anybody that would kind of have me. And so as it were, and in retrospect, it kind of all makes sense to me now, but everything that I wound up getting cast in, whether it was theater or film, wound up being these supernatural roles. So my first theater in New York City, I was like cast in all of this vampire theater, and I was doing like weekly vampire shows all around New York City. And then my first film role was Kevin Lindenmuth's Addicted to Murder, which got into Blockbuster. And there I was on the cover as Angie the Vampire, which led to all of these shot on video 90s horror movies. So it was just kind of a natural progression of, I guess, what was calling to me. Like, now I'm a tarot reader and author, and I write about the supernatural and I write about all of that stuff. So it's not so surprising when I look back. It kind of makes sense because it was just who I am, or who I was and who I am.
Okay, well, that's interesting. So you, as Sasha Graham, the regular person who's not a you know, not just the actress, but just a person, you liked the supernatural. You're like fascinated by it and everything. And somehow or another, you just kind of got drawn into this world where that became your life.
Yeah. And Jonathan, you'll recognize this, right? Being familiar with all of the work that I have done in like the indie SOV movies of the 90s, I was never cast as a final girl. I was never, you know, just kind of like attacked and killed by a serial killer in some like camp blood movie. I was always cast as like the vampire, the werewolf, the like my characters, I was always like kind of strong. And even if my character was murdered by the end of the movie, I did a lot of killing before I like ultimately went down. And I think that is something that in SOV movies from the 90s, which it is a tiny kind of very niche thing that not even a lot of people really know that it even exists. But I think one of the interesting parts about it is that it doesn't kind of diminish the female as like just a chopping block, but it raises them up to be these strong supernatural creatures. Right. So I was always holding my own. I was always a character of incredible strength, whether or not my character died or not at the end. And so that idea of supernatural power is something I've always gravitated towards. And it's something that I continue to write about today when I write and teach tarot and magic and all of that. It's about standing in your supernatural power. So it's actually, interestingly, not that different than the roles I was playing back in the 90s.
That's wow. Okay. Very cool. Like I was thinking when you were saying that, like Tarper from Polymorph, you know, just like she was a hardcore kind of character who didn't take crap from anybody, and was still wasn't the killer or wasn't a supernatural person, but still was a badass character for that, you know, type of role.
Yeah, she was a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, exactly. And so we actually did on Indie Film Cafe, we did review Polymorph and we loved it. I think we gave it a pretty good rating because it was, it's a film that's kind of near and dear to my heart. I know we're going to eventually do Bloodletting. That's going to happen at some point or another, you know. I just absolutely love that world that you guys kind of got involved in. How did you guys end up, like you said, you did Addicted to Murder, right? Was that the title?
Yeah, Addicted to Murder.
Okay, so Addicted to Murder. And then did that lead to working with J.R. Bookwalter's company and everything? And like, how did that all happen?
Yeah, it totally did. I had no idea that there was kind of this underground movement of independent filmmakers who were like, shooting movies on video, but then also getting them distributed into Blockbuster. And we're like, so So I was just like doing my thing, like as an actor in New York and doing independent film. Like I would do anything that came my way. And when I got cast in Addicted to Murder, that kind of opened the door, and suddenly all these other filmmakers, from J.R. Bookwalter to who else did I work with? To like Ron Bonk and SR, and like all the other, like all those other movies that I did in the 90s, people just reached out and were like, hey, would you be in my movie? And I was like, oh yeah, of course. Like, why wouldn't I? And the scripts that were coming to me were so super fun. Like the characters, like I said, were like amazing and badasses. So I was like, yeah, like I didn't even have to audition. They just invited me to be in the movies. So I was like, yeah, I'm down for the ride.
Have you ever had to audition?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, like, so I, being like an actor in the late 80s, early 90s in New York City, I auditioned for like, I auditioned for Who's Got Mail. I auditioned for, I have like, it's so funny because I have my books with like my auditions. I auditioned for tons and tons and tons of movies and plays.
Nice.
Yeah.
Which role did you go for You've Got Mail?
The role of the nanny.
Oh, okay.
It was an ice skating scene in Central Park.
I can see you doing that. I don't know why they, you know, didn't go with you, but, you know.
I don't know what they were thinking.
I don't know. Maybe they were like, I see her too much as a supernatural slayer.
Right? I auditioned for Dazed and Confused, and I'm still a little upset I didn't get cast in that one.
What role now? I got to know what role that one was for.
I don't even remember what role it was, but like, I'm sorry. Like I look at that movie and I think of myself back and I remember that day so clearly because the audition was down at the Tribeca Film Center, you know, Robert De Niro's place down in Tribeca, which back then was like the mecca of like independent film. And I was like seriously nervous. And I ran into the casting director in the bathroom, like before I went in for the actual audition. And I think I'm like, was I like right there with Parker Posey and didn't even know it like at the time. So I don't remember what role I auditioned for. Obviously I didn't get it, but.
Oh man, that always stinks. But then, you know, I always kind of say like, you know, it sucks when you don't get the role or whatever, especially when you see it later. But then again, maybe there's something else being planned for you to be in, you know? So
definitely. No, I'm not complaining. I'm very happy.
Yeah, obviously. So like, you know, you worked with J.R. Bookwalter. You worked with Matthew Jason Walsh and, you know, Bloodletting. I got to find out more because Bloodletting was like one of the movies that I saw that just opened my eyes to like, oh my God, this is independent. This is filmed. Obviously, like it's shot on video. It's made by a group of friends. You can tell, you know, that a bunch of people made this, you know, and it's really good. You know, it was like one of the times where I'm just like really impressed by everything. What was it like working on that set?
That movie was so much fun. And I'll tell you why it was so awesome. We had already made Polymorph. So I was already familiar. Like when I went out to Ohio to make Polymorph, I didn't know everybody that was involved. Like I didn't know the Tempe crew. And there was always this like thing when I was making like the SOV, like 90s movies where I would think if like, cause I would always say yes based on Kevin Lindenmuth or another, like a filmmaker that I knew or had already worked with would say, oh, it's fine. Go work with these people. You'll be okay. So it was always kind of on the good word of another person that I would wind up in this like random state making a movie. And I can't tell you that it didn't like run through my head every now and again. Like, have I just been cast in a snuff film? Right? Because here we were for Polymorph, like in the middle of these like random woods in Ohio. I'm this like actress from New York. Like, how do I know? Like, I didn't know Pete Jackalone back then. What if he like really like, if his gun really was like loaded with like, I didn't know. So when we made Bloodletting, I had already had the experience of making Polymorph with everybody. And so they were all like legit my friends. And it was like, this really fun thing where I drove out with Mike Gingold and Scooter McRae and Tina Kraus. I think we were like, we all went on a road trip, like through Pennsylvania to get to Ohio. And it was like a crazy college fun, like actor road trip. And so by the time that we got to Ohio and made Bloodletting, it was just like a really fun reunion. And I loved the character that I played, like my role of Patty. She was such a kind of like 90s caricature of like, you know, this like alternative chick who like ran a video store. So looking back, like I watched that movie not too long ago with my daughter, and she loved it. Like she thought the character was great, and she thought the movie was great. And it was just a really good time. It was just like a really good reunion with friends.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that I gotta rewatch more and more, you know, because I think, I don't know if they did a new release of it or anything, like a Blu-ray or anything, or if they're going to at some point, but I really hope they do if they haven't. Do you know if they have?
I don't know.
Okay. I wasn't sure. You know, I'm sure if they do, they'll get you on like some kind of like behind the scenes or something. Cause those are what make it fun, because seeing you guys and the chemistry you guys all have and how much you guys are having fun behind the scenes, I always just love that.
It's so fun. And like, not even 2-3 weeks ago, I got together with Scooter and Mike. We were like, we went out for like drinks and we wound up in K-Town, like having like dinner. And it's just, you know, it's just like reuniting with old friends, you know, that it was a very specific time. And it was this very niche, interesting thing that we were all a part of. And so it's special to see them today. And it's just, you know, it's like one of those beautiful experiences that like that. And that's the interesting thing about making movies for me as an actor. It's always about the experience of making the movie. It's never about the final product, which is an interesting thing, because I think a lot of people think about like entertainment and movies and like, oh, it's all about what happens after the movie gets released. But for an actor, it's not. It's about what happens on set when you're making the film. And after that, it kind of is all, it all just disappears. It is what it is. It's like writing a book. You write a book and then the book takes on a life of its own once it's published.
Right.
About your experience while you're actually creating it. And so the same thing is true of movies. And so it's about, you know, I think the special thing about making films or being in plays is that you really create this kind of altered state of reality with the people that you're working with. And for that week or two or however long it takes, you become like this really incredible, like tight-knit family in a world of your own. And there's something really special about that, you know? And so those, you kind of become fused to those people for the rest of your life. So even if 20 years goes by and you don't see them, it's like no time when you see them again.
Wow, that's really, wow, that's profound to think about, because I didn't actually even think of it that way. I'm a filmmaker more or less than an actor, so I think of it as like that movie's my life throughout, like, you know, days and months and years and after, you know, and all this stuff. But actors, they come, they do their part, they leave, they go and do another part, they leave, they go and do another, you know, like it, the cycle continues. And, but it's still, you know, it's still a part of them, you know, right. Especially if they do a reoccurring character or something, you know, it becomes, you know, their life.
And for sure, like as an actor, there's a huge loss of control and loss of attachment, because once you're done, what the director does, what the editor does, what the final cuts become, that's so beyond your control. The only thing you have control over is that moment when you're in the scene doing your lines, like kind of doing your thing. And after that, you have to completely let go. Because you have no control over what happens. Yeah. So, but I can see what you're saying, like as the director, of course, it like is your sole focus and then kind of like becomes the things that you kind of mark your career on. Whereas an actor, you're just like, okay, you've got to let it go and just be grateful for what happened while you were there.
Well, okay. So I'll take it though a little bit differently though. As far as actors go, I believe that an actor's legacy is, you know, usually what they've done in the past, right? You know, and everything. So say you've been in a bunch of, and I'm, you know, I'm going to say, so say you've been in a bunch of bad movies, you know, or whatever, people are going to look at that, you know, your resume and say, well, this person's been in a bunch of bad movies. So they want the films to, like, you know, continue to them as an actor to continue to grow and to be better each time that they act in the movie. Right. Like, would you agree?
I would agree. But even like, I mean, you could put an extraordinary actor in a bad movie with, and they're not going to rise above that. An incredible actor is not going to rise above terrible dialogue, bad lighting, bad audio. You know what I mean? And so hopefully as an actor, you can continue to elevate and find new and challenging and incredible material. But maybe you can.
Have you ever had to, like, ask somebody if you could change dialogue and stuff to make it work for you?
I was never one of those people who felt like, no. Because I always just trusted that if I was kind of signing on to something, that I had already seen the script in advance and that I trusted the director or understood the project enough to know that, okay, like, I'm in this as a collaborative process. And so maybe I would throw out an idea, but I would never ever demand that something would be changed. I never thought that was my place to do as an actor.
Yeah. And I'll say this, I worked with Tina Krause and I love her to death. She's such a sweetheart. I've worked, and when I worked with her, I mean, if she did change anything, it was making it funnier, you know, than what it was. And that worked for me. Oh my gosh, you know?
She's hilarious.
She's even told me that, like, I mean, she's told me straight up, if you give me something, just know I'm going to change it to make it funnier. And I was like, that's A-okay with me as long as it works for the story, you know. But she is hilarious. I absolutely wish I could have been a fly in the wall of you guys traveling to Ohio together. I mean, I could just imagine the craziness that would ensue.
It was fun. It was a very good time. Yeah. And then imagine us, like the four New Yorkers landing in Ohio. So we were like ripping that state apart and continue to do so. Like when I was hanging out with Mike and Scooter just 2 weeks ago, we were like, poor Ohio doesn't stand a chance.
Right. So you became really good friends with the people there and everything. And you continue to work with James L. Edwards. You were in Her Name Was Krista.
Yes.
And as well as, you were in, Brimstone Incorporated, where you did the short that I co-wrote with James, Mama's Boy, which when he told me that he was casting you, I got really excited. You know, aww. Like, I was just like, this is going to be amazing. I can't wait to see it. And he was showing me, like, you know, things along the way to make sure that our short was, you know, kind of what I was, you know, loving. And, you know, a couple things got changed around or whatever, you know, and that happens in the cutting room floor. But I loved it. I absolutely. And I thought you and Kaylee did a fantastic job together, like that. Those scenes just worked really well. So I just really appreciated you guys being in it and everything. So thank you.
Oh my God. Well, thank you. It was a great script. It was a great idea. I so relished that role. I loved it, especially like being a mom myself. Like the mother of a daughter, not a son. So it was really fun to kind of riff on the things that I've seen on the playground or observed with my mom friends who are mothers to sons as opposed to daughters. It's a totally different thing. And it was just so well written and so clever and so fun. And I love the twist and the surprise ending. And so thank you.
Well, the twist and the surprise ending were all James. I'm just going to say that. And it wasn't like he was telling me while we were writing it together, because I wrote half of it. I wrote the first half, sent it to him, and then he wrote the second half, which he had never done before. He thought that was crazy, but like worked. And that's how I work as a co-writer. So he was like looking at it going, oh, this is or what he said, oh, this ending, I hope you like it. And I read it and I was like, okay, that's not where I would have went, but where I would have went would not have taken it that far and would not have gone the route that he did. And I was so excited when I read it. So I loved it. And I loved, I actually based your character off of my friend's ex-boyfriend's mother, who, you know, yeah, which it was so funny when I told her about the story about For Mama's Boy. She was like, wow, that sounds like me and my ex. And I go, so maybe a little bit, because I forgot that I actually forgot that I had done that. I ripped it off from that thing. So I was like, okay, I think that's where it came from. But interestingly, like I didn't go as far, because there was points where I heard like they gave each other like they would like feed each other at the table, and they would, it was even creepier than what we did in the movie, because I just didn't want to go that, you know, because I was like, that would just scare people off generally, unless, you know, unless the person was already committed to the relationship. So I'd like, you know, let's not go that far. But your character was so, I mean, just the way you took it, and you delivered the lines and everything, it was just perfect. Like I saw that character come to life when I saw it. And I can imagine how James felt when he was watching you guys do it, you know, and everything. So I really loved it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So you worked with him. You're working on Trivial, right? With James coming up. Yeah. So, I mean, he keeps wanting to have you back, you know, he loves working with you.
I love it. And one of my favorite things about working with him is it's like, it's just like going home again. You know what I mean? Like suddenly I feel like I'm 26 years old again and we're making Polymore. Like, it's like this great time travel situation with him that I love so much. And what's so interesting is like, I discovered this when I went out for the first time to work with him on Her Name is Krista. You know, it had been, I think, 20 years since I'd been on a B-movie set. And so it was like the same situation, interestingly, but with younger, I guess, people. So here we are, everybody is still kind of there, like on a weekend out of their love for film, doing like a low budget kind of like B-movie. And I found like the same jokes being made that were made back, the same movie references being made, and the same like kind of just love of film that brought everybody together to be there. And I just was like, oh my God, like nothing has changed. Like, it was just so great that, I mean, at the risk of sounding very corny, it is that like independent spirit of like, you know, making independent movies, there is this feeling like you guys are renegades out there doing something that everybody is there, not because they're getting paid a lot of money for, but because they love it. And in a crazy way, like when you're on a big budget movie set and there's millions of dollars at stake and there's insurance and budgets and this, that, and the other thing, and attitudes are like attitudes and entitlement, and like, people are running around thinking like they're oh so important. None of that exists in a B movie. None of that exists in an indie film, because people are there because they love it. They love the art form and they love movies. And it's almost like less is more. And I think it's a really unique environment to be in, and it's really creative and it's really inspiring.
I love that. Like, because I mean, I do see sometimes there's the other side of it. So, you know, there is a little bit of ego. There's a little bit of whatever. And but that's okay, you know, because especially if the ego is head by the person who's making the movie, you know, sort of has to be that sort of leader, that sort of thing. So I don't mind in a little bit of an ego, because, you know, if you wrote, directed, and starring in your own movie, you know, there's got to be a little bit of one. But I do love when people do come together and they make art for the love of it. Yeah. And I love hearing that from other actors, because sometimes I'm always afraid that, you know, it might not be the same. You know, some people may not feel like, you know, there's the love, there's something else guiding you. I want to get famous. I want to do something else. And I feel like it's great that you found people who just love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is why, like, I'm excited always to go back and do it more. You know what I mean? Like, it's always fun. Like, it's just always, it's always fun and always satisfying at the end of the day. Right. Cause like, to my point before, like, it's, for an actor, it's always about the experience of making the movie, for me at least.
Yeah. I mean, you want, when you get on set, you know, and you're in that part. Well, okay. So that does bring me up to a good question about that, because some people, you know, are kind of more method, and some people are more like, I guess, you know, other classically trained actors or whatever. Do you feel like when you get on set, you know, you can turn off and turn on who your character is at, and go back to being Sasha? Or do you feel like it is sort of like, once you're there for the bit?
I do feel like there's a certain bit of turning on and turning off, in terms of like between action and cut, because I think that, and I think it's this interesting heightened reality that happens, whether you're acting, whether you're painting, whether you're writing poetry, or in my case, whether you're like giving a tarot reading. But it is this very focused, very present moment that you have to go into in order to be ultimately like truthful and real inside of a scene. So you can be like goofing around or like whatever with like the people on set, but then the moment that they kind of yell action, you're 100% present with what's happening. And that's the only way that in responding to what's going on in the scene, you can be authentic. And so you never really know what's going to happen. You just have to be rooted in that present moment and respond honestly to what's going on, and hopefully something magical or incredible or very real will come up as you're doing it. But for an artist, you know, or for an actor, that's the space that we always strive to be in, because hopefully like something crazy and amazing will happen when you're in that space. So I love it. I love it. But to me, it's no different than like writing, the space of like being like kind of very inspired in writing or creating any other piece of art. There's not that much difference between acting and writing and dancing and all of that.
Wow, I love that. But I love the idea of being present in the moment, because it's gotta be tough. Cause I don't act a lot, you know. I usually act more my stuff, you know, my own stuff or whatever. When I do act in other people's projects, sometimes it's improv and sometimes it's, you know, written and everything. But when you're presently in the moment, it's sort of hard to like have the lines memorized and be able to be on your mark and have everything and be absolutely 100% present. And I think a lot of people sort of like, you know, the audience sort of takes that for granted. I mean, because they can't really be there with you when, you know, you're doing it. So when they see, you know, maybe you know, the editor took the wrong take, and or the director decided to take the take that makes the actor look a little worse than they were, you know, because maybe that was the best shot they got or something. It feels terrible because, like, they did their best to get on that mark, say those lines the exact same way that they've been doing, and on top of that, be present into that scene.
Yeah. Yeah. And but that's what you give up in being an actor. You have to give up control. You're at the mercy of the cinematographer, the angle of the camera, how the lighting looks. So if that's not done well, well, too bad for you. Right. So but at the end of the day, you still do your best. You show up and you're like, OK, I'm surrendering myself to the process. Like, hopefully it all comes together in an independent low budget movie. You know, maybe it doesn't. But every now and then it does. But at the end of the day, like, did you have a good time while you're doing it? Like, for me, you know, it's about my, like I keep saying, it's about the experience of making the movie, you know, and then hopefully something great comes from it. But if not, you still had a good time.
Maybe. Have you ever had have you ever had a time where you're like, I'm not happy, I'm not enjoying this moment?
Yeah, I had a terrible time, and I've never talked about it, but I mean, I could talk about it now. I don't think there's any harm or any foul. I did half of a movie called Gargoyle Girls. It was probably toward the end. It was probably one of my last B movies that I did in the 90s before I like officially quit acting. And it was just, the whole thing was a shit show from beginning to end. Every single bit of that movie was like just terrible. It was horrible. It was horrible. It was a horrible experience. And he actually, the director, he paid me a sizable amount of money to be in that film. And it was not enough to like stay. It was just a train wreck. And so I guess that was kind of like the perfect kind of last movie before I left acting. And I went off and I think I was like 28 when that was my last movie. And I went off to college because I had never gone to college, and I enrolled at school, and I was like, okay, I think I'm going to take a break with acting. And I'm glad I did. Like, it was the right decision for me. But yeah, that was the only, my only movie and my last movie where I was like, this is terrible on every level.
That's well, did they ever finish that movie?
I think they did. It's apparently it's out there. I've never seen it. I think it's on IMDb, like it's out there as like a finished, it's out there as a finished movie.
I have to see it just to see what you're talking about in a way. Like, I mean, it's funny because like most people would be like, oh my God, it sounded like a shit show. I have no interest in seeing that. But me, I love that, you know, because those are what we do for Indie Film Cafe. We watch like stinky movies, you know, or whatever we call them that. But like when we say stinky, we love them. You know, these are our favorite kind of movies.
You should check it out. I never saw it. It's called Gargoyle Girls by Joe. Joe is his first name. I don't even remember, but it's on IMDb. So there's a copy of it somewhere.
It's not Joe Zazzo, is it?
No, I love Joe Zazzo.
Okay, I was going to say, I love him too. I was like, wait, I don't think I've ever seen him make a bad movie. You know?
Actually, that's so funny. So I just saw Joe. So I recently had a book signing at Forbidden Planet for my last book, The Magic of Tarot, that just came out in October, this past October, like last month, 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago. And Joe came and he gave me a copy of, oh my God, this is one of my favorite movies that I ever made that I don't think exists on DVD, or maybe it does exist on DVD, but Method to the Madness.
I'm not sure.
Oh my God, it's so good. It's so campy. And I play this like young actress who has a split personality. It is like everything that makes like a horror, like over the top movie amazing. So wait.
So tell me, it sounds like it's about a method actress who has a split personality and becomes the part with the split personality, right?
Yes.
Oh, yes. That sounds awesome. I want to watch that so bad.
And it's part of a comp, like the VHS. It's like half of an anthology and the other half is Tina Krause. Like it's Tina Krause on the cover, on half of the cover, and I'm on the other half of the cover. And I know my bit was called Method to the Madness. And it's Joe Zazzo. You could look it up and you'll find it.
So he directed it, right? Or did he just produce? Because the only ones he has right now on IMDb as director are It's Only a Movie and Guilty Pleasures.
It's on Guilty Pleasures.
Okay. So, all right. Now I have to search this movie out and find it. Or just message Joe or whatever and be like, hey, how can I get a copy of that? Because that sounds amazing.
I promise you it will not disappoint. There's dream sequences. There's blood. There's like crazy death. There's like crazy acting teachers. We actually ran into Gary Oldman in Hell's Kitchen when we were shooting that.
That's awesome.
I was like, oh my God, I'm making a movie like right next door to Gary Oldman. This is so fantastic. Oh my God, it's such a great movie. I don't know why it doesn't get more play.
It's tough, man, especially in movies back in the 90s. Though I will say thank God to people like Arrow, like companies like Arrow Video and Scream Factory and people like that are Vinegar Syndrome. They're actually putting out a lot of these movies from the 90s, you know, and whatnot, and putting them out so people can see them and see the hard work that they put out and everything. So thank God, maybe they'll find it their way over there or something. I don't know.
But that's, I hope so. And it was right before the pandemic. Saturn's Core, I don't know if you're familiar with Ross Snyder and Matt DeVisidero, but they put together like a Tempe weekend for J.R. Bookwalter. And we did, they did a screening of Polymorph out in Williamsburg at a legit movie theater for like this brand new audience. And the hipsters were loving it, laughing and like digging it. So a lot of these movies like live on, you know, they're really like time capsules in a sense, and have found new audiences. So I'm glad these movies are being like released.
Exactly. And that, once again, that's why we created Indie Film Cafe too, is to shine light to films like, like all of the films that you've done in the 90s, because all of them were shot on video. All of them were, I think I was talking to a friend of mine, Madeline Deering. I'm not sure if you're familiar with her, but she loves SOV films. So I'm sure she has all of these, things. I just absolutely love that. Like I do too. Like Tony Masiello, who does SOVhorror.com. He does a lot of, puts out a lot of these films out, and JR does, and all these people. So it's amazing that they're out there.
It's awesome. It's so cool.
Yeah. So, okay. So now mainly you've been doing a lot of the, and I'm going to butcher this as tarot. Is that how you pronounce it necessarily? Yeah. 'Cause I always say Tara. I think that's how most people like accidentally pronounce it. And it's tarot, right? Not Tara. Cards.
Well, you know what's interesting is there's actual no official correct pronunciation. So people call it tarot, they call it tarot, tarot, like however you want to say it. But tarot, I call it tarot. It's it's divination through tarot cards.
Yeah, I know. I've never had my tarot card read or whatever yet. Maybe one day I'll do it with you. I've never done that. Not because I don't want to, it's just never did it. Like it's just, it hasn't happened yet. But it will, don't worry. One day. Have you ever had like a reading before that you were like nervous telling them the reading?
Oh yes, 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 yes. So I was like, I literally was a professional tarot card reader for many years before I started writing books about it and teaching people how to read tarot for themselves. So yeah, I've been terrified to read people's cards, but only because their energy terrified me before I even pulled a card. You know what I mean? Like, imagine you're like at a party, like reading, like you've been hired to like read for people, and some like, you know, kind of crazy, like psycho person sits down in front of you. You kind of know from the onset it's going to be a wild reading. So yeah.
You just gave me a title for a horror film.
Which is
Terrified.
Terrified, exactly. Very good.
Yeah, see, there you go. At least like for a short or something. I don't know if that would be a whole feature, but you know, it's a good title. That's copyrighted. Sorry, you can't take it. Nobody can. Right. Well, Sasha can take it if she wants. She can use it for her next book if she needs to talk about her. I mean, because yeah, there's got to be, you know, times in your life where you're like, oh God, this person doesn't have a good reading. Has there ever been like death in the cards?
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting thing because when you're working with the tarot, 9 times out of 10, you're not reading the cards in a literal sense. They're metaphorical, and there's all of these like incredible esoteric systems that are embedded within the tarot deck, and they're really a storytelling tool. They really tell you the story of your life, or they kind of describe the situation that you're in the present moment. Have I ever read tarot for someone who, and it said that they were going to like die tomorrow? No. Have I ever read cards for people who are surrounded or being affected by the death of a loved one that was either recent or about to happen? Yes. Does it bring you into these spaces with people that is incredibly intimate and oftentimes scary and intense? Yes. But it's also an incredible space to be in with a person, because when somebody gets their cards read from you, they're bearing their soul. They're expecting you to see everything about them. So it's an incredibly intimate space. And it's incredibly, I think, a sacred space to be in with another person. When you're sitting and talking to someone who automatically assumes you can see everything about them. So it's a very special thing to do. But ultimately, my favorite thing about tarot is that it's something that you can use as a tool for self-reflection. It's a tool that you can use for magic. It's a tool that you can use to kind of have a deeper understanding of yourself and your relationship with divinity and the world around you. And so inevitably you're going to brush up against death and life and like all of those crazy things. But I think that that's what I want to be kind of rubbing up against, those things that make life valuable. So I kind of embrace the freakiness of it, if that makes any sense.
That makes perfect sense. And I just, more power to you, because I'd probably be terrified myself to the point where I couldn't even really do it, you know, like, because I don't know. I'm one of those people that get, I get way too emotional about stuff. So if I were, I'm not like, what do they call it these days? Empathic or something. I'm not like that, but I do get very emotional when it comes to things and people and things I'm into or whatever. And so if I was doing that, I would be too like worried that telling somebody like their loved one was going to die soon or something, it'd be the same thing as like telling somebody their dog was going to die soon, you know, because it would just hurt me. That's why I never became a veterinarian. Just would hurt me. You know, I would feel the same pain they feel.
But there is a certain magic in not necessarily delivering that news, but in a sense, giving them the tools with how to look, we're all going to deal with the death of our pet. And we're all going to deal with the death of our friends, and we're all going to deal with the death of our parents, theoretically, you know, if we are lucky enough to outlive them. And so there is a certain sort of art form and beauty in preparing them and giving them the tools with how to meet that gracefully. So there's a way in which you can deliver the information without delivering the information, and giving them something that hopefully that is of use to them when they are in the midst of, and that's the interesting thing about reading tarot cards. People don't come to you when life is great. People come to you when they're in crisis, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, am I gonna like get back together with this guy? Am I gonna like find true love? Am I gonna like make the money that I need? Like, is life gonna turn out for me? Okay. So there's already a heightened sense usually when people come to you to have their cards read. And so I think that it's an incredible kind of like honor to be able to speak to people in a heightened reality where they're really listening, they're really paying attention, and they're really kind of hanging on your every word. So if you can empower them to get through the toughest parts of their life, I think that's a gift.
That's amazing. Like, yeah, I never thought about that, but yeah, people do probably come to you when they want something from you about what's going on in their life. You know, it would be sort of terrible if like they were so excited about this thing, but like there was something else going on that they had no idea, you know, about, like their dad was dying and they didn't know that, but they were like, oh man, you know, my girlfriend and I, are we going to get back together? And they're like, yeah, I don't, that's not even close to what we're, the future is trying to tell you.
Exactly.
So I love that though. I absolutely love hearing that kind of stuff. Like I'm fascinated by that world because it is sort of in the supernatural realm. So of course you got probably a lot of people who don't believe in it. You know, my co-host for Indie Film Cafe, he's a scientist, you know, archaeologist kind of guy. He facts, not, you know, whatever. So he would probably, you know, think tarot cards were a little silly maybe, but do you ever like turn people around into like believing in them?
I do not think it's my job to convince anybody of anything. And it's an interesting thing because especially when I'm teaching or talking to groups in places like the South, where there's really a kind of, the community is kind of against it, or like, you know, people who grow up in religious situations where there's really this kind of bias against tarot card reading. My advice is always like, if somebody is afraid of the cards, it's not your job to convince them that they're good. You know what I mean? Like, and it's the same kind of thing. Like if somebody doesn't like tomatoes, it's not your job to convince them to like tomatoes, right? You either do or you don't. So yeah, like it's not, I'm not out there kind of trying to crusade or can change anybody's mind. But I do think that, I think there are people out there who are fascinated by the unknown, and really tarot is one of those things where, one of the things that I find fascinating as a reader and a teacher, as a tarot reader and as a teacher, I think that one of the primary reasons that people go to tarot readers to begin with, and they don't even realize that they're doing it, is that a tarot reader inadvertently acknowledges that there is an invisible world, right? Because if you talk to anybody who's gone to a tarot reader or a psychic or whatever, or a tea leaf reader, and it was a good reading, you'll hear them say, oh my God, it was unbelievable. She saw X, Y, and Z. She knew all of this stuff. What is that really saying? It's really saying that there is this kind of mysterious space that has been confirmed. And so I think that oftentimes the role of oracles and tarot card readers is that they confirm that there is an invisible world around us, you know? And I think that in and of itself is an incredibly valuable thing for a lot of people. I mean, honestly, Jonathan, most of the world is invisible, right? All of our experiences of the world is our own projection of what we're experiencing from inside of our head. 3/4 of the world, as far as I'm concerned, is invisible. And it's the trick of the material world that makes us think we're all on some kind of a level playing field. But you know as well as I do that that nobody, nothing is what it looks like at surface value. And that's the point at which we all get so confused. Oh, that person is different from me because they have black skin or yellow skin or because of their gender. That's a fallacy. Right. That what we take for granted because we see it on a surface level isn't the truth. And I think the truth of the universe and of people is much simpler at an energetic level. And so I think that these are the spaces in which tarot readers and psychics and intuitives and artists help us navigate. You know, I think when it comes to the invisible world, it's why film and literature and dance and art are better at expressing those things that are inexpressible.
Wow. Yeah. It's weird. You're saying something that I completely resonated with, was saying the invisible world, because I had like, I don't know if it's an outer body experience or something, but there was one time I was young. I was like maybe 14, 15. I was around the dinner table, right? And out of nowhere, I was thinking of some other things or whatever. You know, I was in my own mind. I was somewhere. And I come back to reality, you know? But it was like weird. It was like all of a sudden I felt like I wasn't in the right place, you know? But I was. Like, I absolutely, I kind of like blinked a couple times to make sure like I was, you know, awake, you know, kind of thing. But I don't even remember how I, like, where I was before then or what happened, you know, like it wasn't, and nobody even noticed anything, you know, like it wasn't, you know, something. And I'm just like, all of a sudden, like my eyes were just sort of like looking around at like the world. And, you know, it was just weird. It was such a weird, and I hadn't thought about that until you were mentioning this stuff, because I think I kind of just let that go of like, eh, it's kind of weird, but whatever, you know, like it didn't resonate with me as like, that was a thing, you know, like, and now I'm like, oh, wait, maybe that was something that happened that I got to maybe before, and I don't even remember it, but I got to see beyond something that I wasn't supposed to see.
Yes. And I think that happens to people so much more often than people actually give themselves credit for. And I always actually use the example of one of the most metaphysical and trippy things that people do on the reg is, and they don't give themselves, they don't kind of pay credit to what it actually is like legit the act of like sex. Like if you are having amazing consensual sex, you are literally having out of body experiences, literally losing yourself, like literally like, but people will just be like, oh, it was a good time. Oh, it was a good time. But you know what I'm talking about, right? Like you're literally losing yourself in another person. You're literally transcending your own body in the material world and moving into this space where time and space and physicality loses everything that is kind of quote unquote normal. And people will just be like, oh yeah, it was a hot time.
Yeah, I think because people can't, you know, because people don't really know and understand what, you know, how to explain it, you know. Yeah,
there's not a language or to support that, right? There's not, it's not something that is necessarily given attention and, yeah, and support around. And the same thing is true, like of little children, like of little kids. And like how old, like when you were talking about that, like moment at the dinner table, like how old were you?
I want to say about 14 or 15. Yeah. I want to say that old. I don't really remember. I remember the table because, you know, my parents have a new table, you know, it's a black table, but back then it was red. So I remember that specific thing, but I don't remember. And I remember it was dinner time. We were eating dinner at the time, you know, like the family dinner. And it was like me, my dad, and my mom. And like, you know, and then that happened. And I didn't talk to my parents about it. I didn't mention it to them because, I mean, not that I don't think they believe me, but they wouldn't. I mean, I don't think anybody, but if you knew what happened, you know, could explain it, because all of a sudden I was back in the real world, but it just was like, all of a sudden, like, it was like almost like dots were coming back, and it was just like all of a sudden it was there. It was weird. It was such a weird thing. And I didn't even think about it until you mentioned that. And I was just like, wait, that sort of reminds me of that situation.
Yeah. It's fascinating.
It is. And probably another reason why I'm into the supernatural. Like, I've gotten into, you know, I write movies and horror and stuff. I mean, originally I wanted to do comedy. Then, you know, I started realizing horror was sort of, I mean, was my love, you know, but I didn't want to get typecast as doing, you know, just horror. But actually now I'm very happy with just doing horror, you know, because it's just a lot of fun. But that's the thing. Doing that is sort of fascinated me. I think I've always sort of felt the spiritual connectedness, you know? So I would absolutely love to work with you someday. So hopefully we can make that happen. Like, you know, where I direct you instead of watch you just do my script, you know. I'm sure that'll happen at some point. Yes. You know, in our career paths. I mean, you're gonna continue to act, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh my God. As long as you guys are asking me to come out and be on a movie set, I'll be there.
So you left acting for a while. What actually brought you back?
James.
All right.
Like, seriously, James. So I left, I went to college. I became a mom. I raised my daughter in New York City, became a tarot reader, then a published author, and now like an international tarot teacher. And so I wasn't surprised, but I was certainly delighted when he reached out, because I saw what you guys were, all of you guys from the 90s were up to, making your movies and still making your movies. And
I'm not from the 90s, man. I didn't even discover you guys until 2004 or three.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was Make Your Own Damn Movie, the book from Lloyd Kaufman. And he had like interviews with all these SOV guys, Chris Seaver and Brett Kelly and all these people. And I just kind of went into this like downward thing of like, you know, this rabbit hole of watching all these indie films. And, you know, so it was 2000s for me to like discovery. I know you had left by then, but, you know, that was when I fell in love with everything, which means that there's somebody in 2021 and soon to be 22 that'll discover you guys, and they'll go down that rabbit hole, and maybe they'll become a new filmmaker who will go and make these movies or whatever, you know. Yeah. And that's amazing.
It's so cool.
Yeah. So I'm sure that now that you have a Facebook that people could contact you with and stuff, do people contact you that have watched the movies and, you know, are big fans of yours?
Well, you know, what's so interesting is that as of late, and it's just recently happening this year, there seems to be this interesting crossover between people who are into my movies or into the 90s movies, but also into tarot. And they go, oh my God, are you Sasha Graham, who also made those like horror movies back in the 90s? Are you kidding me? And so it's like this weird like double thing where they get really excited because they're into both, and then they connect the dots and realize that I'm the same, the actress plus the author. And so that's like, for me, that's amazing, because for me the correlation between the two is not so separate. So I get excited when the fans are equally into both things and are like, oh my God. So yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. They're like, oh, you were in Polymorph and, you know, all these, you know, films that you did. So that's amazing that you're able to reach out to people that love both, you know?
Yeah, me.
So, well, thank you so much. Like, it's been a delight chatting with you. Is there anything like going on now that you want to promote?
Yeah. Well, if anybody watching is into tarot, I have a new book out called The Magic of Tarot, available everywhere where books are sold. And this coming early on in the new year, I'm going to be traveling a lot and teaching. I'll be down in West Palm Beach headlining the StarCon Tarot Festival. I'm going to be in Dallas, Texas in May, I want to say, doing another like big tarot thing. I'll be teaching at Kripalu in the Berkshires, Massachusetts in early February. And then, yeah, like be on the lookout for the James L. Edwards movies that are out there and keep supporting 90s SOV movies and the distributors who are, and the filmmakers who are putting out these like awesome films or reissuing them. And yeah, that's it. And you can find me at sashagram.com and reach out, follow all my socials and all that stuff.
That's great. That's great. I love that you have an official website because you don't really see that as much these days. Everybody like mainly keeps with their social media stuff. And they're like, it's not lazy. I think it's just easier, you know, or whatever, but like to just have a Facebook and then, you know, you can find out all the information that way or whatnot, you know? So there you go. I really appreciate you being here. If you stick around and chat with me afterwards, but everybody else, thank you guys for checking this out. And check out her website. You said sashagram.com or oh man, you got a .com too. That's awesome. Cause you know, some people it's harder to get that for some reason or whatever, like they have to pay more, you know, for that .com. But thank you so much. And I appreciate it. So everybody else have a good one. Bye.